You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is a podcast from ComediansComedian.com.
This is the Comedian's Comedian Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Stuart Goldsmith and I'm doing this one on the fly. I'm round the house of the brilliant comedian and fabulous lady, Louisa Omulan, and she's kindly let me have her sitting room to record this blurb for this episode in, because next episode I'm going to be releasing the conversation that I've just had with Louisa, which was extremely invigorating. So I hope you're all looking forward to that one. This one, however, was recorded, as has quickly become a ComCom tradition around about this time of year, in a hotel room in Dubai. This is me and a comedian called Prince Abdi, who some of you will know from Show Me the Funny. Many of you will not know from Show Me the Funny. He didn't last all that long on the show, and the show itself did not last all that long. But he, as you will hear, is an absolutely sensational comedian. I've had so much fun gigging with him in Dubai, and I can only apologise, as I'm sure he will, for the just rank amount of coughing during this. We've done our best to edit some of it out. Some of it, I know, will has still ended up in there. As you'll hear, you're allowed to smoke indoors in Dubai, and every venue that we went to was absolutely clouded in smoke. I'll tell you more about this in a moment when I chat to you in the middle bit. For now, please welcome Prince Abdi.
How's it going, Prince? We're 18 floors up in a hotel in Dubai.
Wow, this is amazing. I can see the Burj Khalifa, I can see lots of tall buildings. You've got a great, and you've got the royal suite as well.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of it's quite posh, isn't it? There was a car accident down there earlier on.
Oh,
no one was injured. Two cars hit each other, and I was sat here typing, and I heard like a sort of a tearing noise.
Wow!
And I went, God, that almost sounded like a car accident.
I can't believe there can be car accidents in Dubai when you've got like 7 lanes.
Well, it's just more likely. We're for the benefit of the listener. Hello, the listener. We're looking down at two directions, 7 lanes each of cars caning it along next to a sort of futuristic monorail thing. But how are you enjoying the gigs?
Yeah, they're great. Great crowd, good crowd. They're thirsty for comedy, so it's always good to have that. Sometimes back in London when we're doing gigs, you know, some gigs can be more difficult than others because, you know, there's comedy club in every corner. Whilst over here, this is like once a month and it's great. It's great. I'm loving it. Yeah, loving it.
That's funny. That sounds like the PR thing, in case anyone from the gigs is listening.
They probably are.
So we should explain as well, we're both coughing a lot because people are allowed to smoke indoors here.
That is insane. And then I heard the e-cigarette, are they banned from here?
Yeah, they said last night.
That's mental.
Yeah.
So the vapor cigarettes are banned, but the real ones you can smoke inside.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's why I'm coughing, because it's disgusting. Every time I keep going out for fresh air and coming back in,
Yeah, man, it's hideous. Yeah. So, which has been your favourite gig out of the six we've done so far? One have you enjoyed most?
I like the one in the little golf club. That was quite good fun. It's a small room, small audience, but yeah, they were just up for it. And sometimes it's not about the quantity, it's about the quality, in my opinion. But yeah, I enjoyed last night as well. Last night was pretty cool.
You did great last night, man. You closed. Was that the?
I closed. Yeah, that
the was second time you closed.
Time,
I think
second time I closed. Yeah,
because we've been revolving on a bill here with
which is good.
Lovely, you know? Ian Coppinger. So everyone's been opening, middling, and closing, which has been great.
I'm loving it. Yeah, it's. I had a guy because I was here recently. So
tell us about that. You were absolutely shitting yourself on the way here.
I was because the turnover to get comics here is every 2 years. And I was here like 3 months ago, like 4 or 5 months ago. So I had to come out with brand new 2020, which was difficult because I only got the gig like a month ago to fill in. So I had to, I was going to every open mic night in London and try to get as much material as possible.
Oh, were you really?
Yeah.
Because I don't, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I was trying to do that because I was like, oh God, you know, it's the same audience. And it was, a lot of them were the same audience. So I had to change everything, a lot around. That's why, and then I had a guy, because I'd been like, you know, shitting myself basically. For someone to shout out, I've heard that before, and that hasn't happened. Luckily, could happen tonight on the last show. But I had a guy come up to me and he said, "Yeah, I saw you 4 months ago, and yeah, I recognize some of the stuff. Like some of the stuff. You know how hard I worked, to get lots of new stuff in such a short space of time. So yeah, apart from that, yeah, it's been good, it's been really good. I got a bit ill because of the smoke, but apart from that, yeah, I'm enjoying
the smoke and the Disaronno that you were drinking last night. So tell me, how would you describe the sort of stand-up that you do to someone who hasn't seen it? Because you're one of the kind of you don't have a huge profile at the moment. You've yet to do an hour at Edinburgh. I know you've been up to Edinburgh, and we'll talk about that in the past. But you haven't done your kind of opening hour.
Yeah.
And something else we'll talk about a little bit down the line is probably Show Me the Funny and whether or not that was a help or a hindrance to where you were in your career at the time. But just mentioning that at the moment, we won't go into depth on it just now. But you and I both did a show in 2011,
I think.
Was it 11?
11,
10
yeah.
or 11.
Like 3 years ago,
Called Show Me the Funny, which was an ITV1 show, which is one of the main channels in the UK. And it was...
You did great on that show.
Thank you.
Yeah, you did. And I remember when it came out, I was telling all my friends to watch it because I thought they were going to show me like a couple of times that I was a bit funny. I thought they were going to show that, but they did not. Because they edited it, and all my friends were like, please don't embarrass us again, don't make us watch this show. It was so painful.
You didn't do great. You crashed out on, as far as the TV show was concerned.
Yeah, I crashed out on the second episode. But I was quite famous for like 3 months all over England, so power of TV, but for the wrong reason. I remember doing a gig, and I was like, I was selling out some gigs as well, like that I was on a bill, because people wanted to come and see me. I remember the first gig that I was doing after Show Me the Funny, it was packed, and they introduced me, and as I'm walking, there was like a big group of stag, and one of them just whispers to his mate, and I could hear him as I'm walking past them. He goes, oh God, this gig is shit. I was like, oh no. But they were right, they were fine after that. But then I'll be like walking in the street and like dude in a white van will be like, mate, keep going! And it's, that's that kind of encouragement.
No way, you're getting positive hecklers from
some positive hecklers. Yeah, and this little old lady, I remember she come up to me, I was on a bus and she came over to me and she goes, I don't know why you put yourself through that, Sunshine. It's very painful to watch. I'm like, come on, why are you watching that show?
I'm just realising now, I think you're the first person that I've had on this podcast who did Show Me the Funny, who was on that thing together.
Really?
We're sort of bonded forever through that, aren't
we?
Yeah,
we're still.
So tell me about your experience of doing it. Where were you in your stand-up before that happened? How long had you been going?
I was going, that was 2011, so I was going 4 years at the time.
Okay, and you just given up your day job?
I just gave up.
And you just had a baby?
And I just had a baby, yeah.
Oh my God.
So it was quite a tough time, and I just thought, I put all my eggs in one basket, and I thought, yep, I'm going to go for it, I'm going to do this, and then yeah, that happened, and yeah, it was quite hard, and I was getting booed and heckles, and I lost some bookings as a result as well.
Is that right?
Yeah. And some promoters that never seen me before just saw me, Show Me the Funny, and they just judged me watching Show Me the Funny, and they just went, oh, sorry, we'll have to cancel.
Did you enjoy doing the show itself? Did you have a good time for the couple of weeks you were there?
To be honest, I thought it was going to be just a stand-up show where you do stand-up. I mean, we were doing things like for example, in Liverpool, we were looking for different things like super lamb bananas and all these crazy activities. It was a bit like Apprentice.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that type part of it. I just wanted us to concentrate on the stand-up. So it was a good experience, but I wouldn't do it again. I would not do it again. No. I was about to say something, but I completely forgot. Anyway.
That's okay. And so you put all your eggs in one basket. You at the time, there must have been a lot of pressure on you to do well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it became clear that you didn't do well because you went out very early.
Yeah, yeah.
So what did that feel like?
I was horrible, and I was getting some. I don't get people. I was getting so much hate mail.
What?
It was hilarious. Really? Yeah.
Because this is good. We were talking about this the other day. Because I came out of that show
really,
having
bro.
Done fine, but yeah. No one remembered me, or you know, I'm just sort of like some generic nice guy. Whereas you were sort of very visually different. I mean, you've got a very different look now. To
I've
what
got hair, but some people still remember. They're like, "Well, you know, show me the funny." Like people still remember the show. It's like, wow. I had some guy just message me, and he just went, "I hate you." That was it. I had another person that said to me, I just saw you on Show Me the Funny. It's people like you that just make our days a joy. I was just like, wow. Like, what do you mean a joy? I replied back and she went, well, it's good to see somebody struggling in life.
Oh my God. Like,
wow.
And this is, I mean, most people, when they start receiving this kind of like abuse and hate mail and people tweeting at them and the rest of it, I guess most of the time, most comics or artists or singers or whatever, at least the stuff that they're putting out there is they're putting out it out there on their own terms.
Yeah.
Whereas this is like people are reacting to an edited job that you're not in control of.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not like, you know, if you're on Live at the Apollo and you tank, they don't show it.
Absolutely, yeah, they won't do that. And I remember the second gig that I did before I got knocked out was at the Army. And I remember doing it, and I thought I did okay. You know, there were some bit funny bits and some not so funny bits. And I thought they were going to show both part of the funny and not funny. But what they did was, and this is why editing is very powerful, was during the interval, they were filming people in the audience. So they were filming the soldiers, like, in the audience. And there was one soldier doing his laces, and there was another soldier yawning. And then, so when I was doing my set, I'd say a joke, and it would cut to a soldier doing his shoelaces.
Or yawning.
Or yawning. And people look at that.
Didn't realise they did that.
Yeah, okay. They did that. And the funny thing was, I remember one of the editors was, like, the nicest guy in the world, and he was so nice to me. And then when he went into this little lab or office, he just went, ha, 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 I'm going to get them. So, you know, but you live and learn, and you just have to keep going. And luckily, it didn't, in terms of the London circuit or the circuit in general, I didn't lose much work. I lost a little bit of work, but not much, because I was just getting my teeth in there at the time.
Yeah. And it probably helped that the show didn't go on to become the runaway success that people expected it to.
Oh, I'm glad. Because if it did, then yeah. Because if it did, then yeah, I'll be the one who's bitter. No. I mean, straight away, I knew with the whole concept, I knew that the gig wasn't going to be a success because the producers were the same producers as X Factor. And if you watch X Factor, you know, somebody saying they can sing, you know, on TV, and then they go on stage and they can't sing, can be hilarious. Mm. But why, if you put a comedian on stage and the comedian isn't doing well, whether it's the editing or the comedian themselves, it's painful to watch.
That's a really good point.
Yeah,
yeah, it's actually watching people tank is a horrible
it's
feeling
horrible.
That you
like,
don't want to do.
Yeah, I mean, if it's like I don't know, if me and you are in a gig and we're both like dying on our ass, we're mates, like say for example, you tell a joke on stage and you don't get nothing and you're like, right, next joke. Like, that's funny, mm-hmm. like, because we're realising like, okay, this is a tough gig. But when you're doing it actually on TV, yeah, it doesn't work.
So you were only 4 years into your career at the time. You'd not done Edinburgh, as we mentioned, and you were being paid. You'd just gone full-time, hadn't you?
Yeah, I just went full-time.
But it
was scary because I didn't know when my next... So maybe I had like a couple of weekends booked for the month. That was it.
Yeah. So it was like, you weren't someone who had to go full-time because you were so busy. You were someone who wanted to give up the day job and switch.
Yeah. Because when I had my daughter, it was very difficult to get any sleep. She just would not. She kept waking up every hour and a half. And I was teaching at the time. So I'd go to school, like, I'd go and teach with no sleep whatsoever. And then in the evening, I had to do a gig. And then the same thing again. I'll come home knackered, and then same thing happens. My daughter's just crying away. It's like a little bit selfish, but yeah, she's all right.
But I suppose what I'm getting at is, did the experience of not doing well on the show, did that make you think? Did that knock your confidence in terms of how good a comic you were?
Yeah,
or were you still going out and?
No, I mean, I was still going out there, but it kind of knocks you. I mean, I mean,
given the, we know it was a contrived situation, we know it shouldn't relate to the real world. But it probably was, at the time, it feels like it does.
It was hard because it was a bit like being famous, but for like being famous for being the unfunny comedian. That's how it felt like. So a lot of people recognized me, and I'd go to a comedy club, and they all recognized me. So it kind of straight away, there's that disadvantage where people are looking at you going, he's going to be
shit. It's like the compere's just gone, please welcome a shit act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like. And I remember, like, so many comedy clubs I went to, and sometimes people come up to me, and they were like, you're on tonight, mate? I was like, yeah. They were like, ha-ha, looking forward to it. And it's just like for them just to laugh at me.
did you then go on to have bad gigs?
Well, some of them I had great gigs, some of them.
And because as soon as you are funny, they go, what is this?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And then some of them, it was tough because I wasn't given the opportunity to be funny. And because as soon as I, especially like gigs with stag dudes and, yeah, so I'd go on stage, oh, you're shit, get off, show me the funny. So straight away, you're like, you're trying to deal with them, but at the same time, it was difficult. I remember doing a gig once, and when I went on stage, the alarm just went off. Like, and I was like, the alarm has heckled me on the back of this TV show. And then people recognized me from Show Me the Funny, get off. And it was just like, but I just kept going. And yeah, I just, and obviously with this job, you have to have a thick skin to do it.
Did you ever consider stopping? Did you ever listen to that negativity? Because I mean, we've all had bad gigs, but it seems like you were in a particular hole there. You've given them a gift of a way to attack you. I mean, like, you know, we have tough gigs, but I think you must have been in an incredibly difficult position, even amongst the very hard job of doing stuff.
It was so bad at one point. I remember a couple of gigs I did. I was in Prince Abdi. I changed, like, I was a character.
Really?
Yeah, I did this Nigerian character. So I'd go and say, hello, my brothers and sisters, how are you tomorrow? Like, I'd just go on and I'd just do this kind of guy, try to be funny. It wasn't really working because people are like, is this guy a character? Is he really, does he sound like that?
Because it was motivated by a desire to work.
To try and change and people not recognising me. And people are like, you're from Show Me the Funny, get off.
Oh, mate.
Yeah, but that was only like a couple of gigs.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it happened quickly and then it disappeared again.
And then I remember when I got heckled at one point, one of the girls was like, you're from Show Me the Funny. And I stayed in character. I was like, I'm not from Show Me the Funny, you show me the funny. And it was just like, bit of desperation, I'd say.
So let's talk about your act then. What sort of comedian are you, for people that haven't seen you?
I'm awesome. I'm joking. I'm actually joking. I don't know. I like to just tell stories and make it funny. And yeah, just I'm not really, I don't know. My jokes are like all over the place, to be honest. I just want to be funny, to be honest. I don't really have anything to say. I'm not political or anything like that. And I'm just, storyteller, jokes, like just things I see that I find hilarious. Something happened recently, I've never told this on stage. I was with my dad. My dad speaks 11 languages, and this is a true story. We're in Chinatown, right? I was eating some Chinese food. Well, before we ate, like our dish came out. When the Chinese guy says, the other Chinese guy in Chinese goes, who's this for? And the other Chinese guy goes, for the blackies over there.
No way.
I'm serious. And my dad was like, who are you calling the blackie? In Chinese.
Oh,
they're
my
all
God.
Freaked out. They absolutely freaked out. And then my dad continued. He goes, we don't use that kind of language right here. That was inappropriate. All in Chinese. And they were like,
That's incredible.
Then the manager came over. And then he was like, I'm really sorry. And my dad started speaking Chinese to him. And he was like, how come you can speak like Cantonese? And they were just like, look. What, that was inappropriate. I don't want the food. Take the food back. And then we left. And then my dad wrote a letter of complaint to them. And then they send us a voucher, but we didn't go further. But he just speaks that. And he does that. He freaks people out all the time. Like, so he speaks so many languages.
Does he speak 11 languages?
I don't know. Like, he travelled quite a lot in the early days. And he studied in some of those countries.
Okay.
And he learned them. Like, I asked him, how long did it take you? And he's like, 6 months to a year. I'm like, who learns languages that quick? So he picks the languages up quite quick. He freaks people out. On the tube as well, sometimes. Like, he'll freak them out. Like,
are both your parents Somalian?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and what's their background? Like, what job was your dad doing?
He used to be a solicitor / interpreter.
Okay.
So he was a solicitor. So he would take cases from, like, you know, for foreign People that can't speak the languages. So that's why he can speak 11 languages.
Okay.
So he was solicitors for, like, I don't know, Spanish clients and Portuguese clients.
Okay. And your mum, you were telling me what your mum did, but I forgot.
She owned a restaurant.
Gotcha. So she, yeah. Okay.
Restaurant. How'd you say it? Restaurateur. She was an entrepreneur. That's
well, this is it. I was going to say, because you were a bit of an entrepreneur as well. And this is where you realise that all the conversations we've been having over the last week I've been storing up. Yeah. We don't need to talk about your business interests when you were a younger man. You don't need to say exactly what they were. But I think it's quite interesting because I think you, on stage you are, and I've said this to you numerous times this week, you're daft as a brush. You're just...
No one's called me daft before.
You are, man, you are.
Except for my mum, probably.
I love your act because you on stage are this incredible combination of someone that's really kind of goofy and I don't mean stupid, but kind of clowny in a good way. You must know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
That you're like, you know what I mean? You come on, you're just kind of all like kind of... You win us over by how kind of preposterous your life is. Like, and we'll talk a bit more about this because I know one of the things I've said to you a couple of times this week is that you don't even need to write jokes. You just say things that happen in your life and just they're funny because you're an idiot. But you're not an idiot and you're combining that with, like, your punchline rate is exceptionally high. You're telling really silly, innocent stories that have just got joke, 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 joke. Well, laugh, 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 laugh. And a lot of them aren't even joke jokes. They're just funny because it's you, right? I think that's an incredible...
Are you saying I look funny?
No, I think that's a really powerful thing for a comedian to have. But I want to try and work out... Part of what I want to talk to you about was I want to work out how... smart are you really? How much of this is calculated and how much of it is you just being daft and lucking your way into funny situations? So you were quite a shrewd kid. You said you were the first kid in your school to have a car.
Yeah, I was 14. And it's true. I used to just, I don't know. Yeah, I was the only kid that had a car. And the way I learned was I just bought this car. I think it was like, how much did I buy it for? Something like 80 quid. This car, shit car, but...
What's a 14-year-old doing with 80 quid?
I sold VHS tapes.
Okay.
I didn't know they were porn, but yeah, VHS tapes. I had customers, yeah. I used to sell these VHS porn, and...
When you were 14, that's hilarious.
Yeah, I was probably 13, and then, yeah. Okay. And, yeah, 13, 14, and yeah, and I used to sell them, and I used to get money for that, and, yeah, saved up, bought a car... And I was the only, school kid. I used to drive to school.
So you were 14 and you would drive to school?
Yeah, I would drive to school.
Okay.
And I never got caught, which was insane.
Did you, I'm trying to imagine the 14-year-old Prince Abdi, did you recognise that getting caught was a thing, that you'd get into trouble and that would be really bad? Or were you just kind of blithe to that? Were you like, whatever?
No, I was aware of the consequences, but I just thought, I didn't think it would be severe. I just thought, yeah, they'll be like, yeah, just get your license and get your license. Yeah, we'll give it back to you in 3-4 years' time. That's what I thought. But I never got caught, which was insane. And then I almost actually died because I was driving my car one night and I think I went through a red light. I can't remember, but next thing you know, a bus just hit me, missed me, and hit the back door. So I'm driving. I can't do this visually. So I'm driving, and then next thing you know, the bus misses me, but hits right just behind me, twists my car, spins, breaks into this like jewelry shop. Alarm goes off, and I just restart my car and drive, parked it in there, my area. Next thing you know, I get out of the car, and the car explodes. It was mental.
Oh my god!
Yeah, it was mental.
And you're 14 at the time.
14. And then I sold some more VHS. Got another car.
This is incredible. This doesn't, do you know what I mean? Do you see what I mean? Do you see what I'm getting at? That this doesn't sit with the kind of goofy, happy-go-lucky guy that you appear to be.
Yeah, I went through, yeah. I was in a gang too.
Really?
In South London.
What gang?
I wasn't good at it though, I'll be honest with you.
Go on.
I really wasn't good at it because I remember I was 16. I just got my national insurance and my dad got me a job at a library. So there was this like charity library not far from us. That was my job. And so I had like two lives. So I had the library job, and I was in a gang as well. Okay. And when I say gang, it was just like just us hanging around with our hoodies and yeah, just walking around thinking okay, we're really bad. And then it was innocent at first, and then some of them start smoking, and then next thing you know, they're like, oh, we need to go and like break into this and break into that. There was a petrol station that was quite bad that we used to break into. Not break into, like, but it was one of those petrol stations where they can actually lock, like, if you go in, the guy can actually lock it. So we used to, one of us used to hold the door.
Yeah.
And then the rest of us used to, and we used to just steal crisp. That was it.
Okay. Like Pringles. So when you say a gang, we're not talking, you know, selling crack on street corners.
No.
It's we're shoplifting crisps.
Yeah. We used to shoplift crisps and then, but then it started escalating and they start getting into weed. And then I was like, whoa, this is not for me. And then start robbing people in the street and each one took turns. And I used to try and avoid not to like rob anyone. And because I just wasn't good at it. And I remember I went to one time, it was my turn to rob someone. So the gang was like, yep, go and rob that guy.
Like mug, like physically go up and attack someone in the street?
Yeah.
Violently.
And I was nervous as fuck. I've never been so nervous ever. Right, never been so nervous. So I went up to this guy, and I was nervous. I didn't know what to say to him. So I was like, "Oi!" I said, "Give me your money, right?" Like, you know, try to look very, very angry, like rough and tough. I was like, "Give me your money," and he looked at me and he went, "You work at the library shop." It was the most embarrassing thing ever. And I tried to deny. I was like, "I don't work in no library." "Yes, the charity library shop. Yes, I was there the other day. You sold me a book. Thanks for that." I'm like, "I'm serious."
And, oh my God.
And then the gang are looking at me like they're like over there just watching, like thinking, what the hell is going on? Like, how come he hasn't robbed him? How come he hasn't punched him? I wasn't going to hit him anyway, but I was just nervous and I had to like kind of impress the gang. And then he goes to me, "All right, I see what's going on." This guy was just like proper middle class. He's like, "Yeah, I see what's going on. So the gang have told you to come and rob me."
Oh my God.
And I said to him, "Yeah." And he goes, "Right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn around and I'm going to walk away, okay? And you're going to do the same thing." And I was like, "Yeah, but if I do that, they're going to beat me up." He goes, "Well, do you want me to call the police?" So me and him are like having this conversation. And the gang are like far away just thinking, "What the hell? What's going on? He's not doing anything." So this man goes, right. "I tell you what, I'm going to run away, okay? You're going to pretend that you went to rob me and I'm going to run away and you're going to run after me. We're going to the corner, okay? And yeah. Then we'll just get away from there, and you just tell him I've got away. All right, we'll do that." So we did that. So he ran away. Oh, I'm running after him, but he was very slow.
So you got even slower.
And then he went around the corner, and then I came back, and then they were like, "What happened?" I was like, "He got away." And then the gang rushed me. They beat me right there and there. Then they knew that.
They saw through it.
Yeah, they saw through it. Me and the guy were talking for like 10 minutes. Who does that? What gang member just chats to you? Like, and then, yeah, they rushed me and it wasn't too bad. Like, it could have been worse. They just like, each one just gave me a punch. That's what they did. And then I decided, way before, I mean, I was always uncomfortable being in a gang. So I just said, "Nah, this is not for me. I'm going to get out of here." And then I think after that, like a year later, one of them got killed. And another year later, two of them went to prison. And another year later, one of them went mad. It was just, it was insane. So I was very like lucky that I got out before it could have been like really bad. And and then I went back to that charity bookshop and I saw that guy. And he goes, "How's the gang going?" And I was like, "I quit." He was like, "Good on you." Yeah, and yeah, it turns out he was my dad's mate. So I was just like, wow. And he didn't know that he was my dad's mate, but because I've never met him before. So they worked in the same law firm. Yeah,
It's a good job you didn't successfully mug him and then like meet him at a wedding or something.
Yeah,
like,
that would have been mental. Well, to be honest, I was nervous. I didn't know what to do. When they told me to go and rob him, I had no idea what I was supposed to do. So I just said to him, "Give me your money." Like, you know, the most angry face, like.
Jesus.
And I haven't got like, and my eyes are hazel. So, you know, if you've got hazel eyes and you're trying to threaten someone, they just go, "Oh, your eyes are nice." They're gorgeous. Put them away.
Ah.
So this is Prince. I mean, he's, my God, it's so much fun hanging around with him. Some of you will know that I'm saving up for episode 100, an interview with the wonderful Phil Kay. And Phil is one of those comedians who seems almost like an archetypal trickster spirit. You know, I think I said that, who did I say this about? Sometime back in the annals of the show, someone will remind me on Twitter, at ComComPod, I'm sure. But Phil is someone who you just feel like if you hang out with him, crazy shit's going to happen to you. And Prince is exactly the same as you can already hear, and you will hear over the rest of the episode. He is just preposterous. A fantastic comedian. And I couldn't be more excited to see that he's really coming into his own in terms of the very unusual style he has, the material he's making. And it was just a pleasure to watch. Sometimes when you're on a tour, you kind of go, okay, here's the same people. I'm going to watch the same people for 9 nights. But Prince was just, there was always something to enjoy in how he would deal with a room and how a room would go along with him and just be swept up in this completely joyful madness that he brings to the stage. So high recommendation from me. I'm not sure if he will do Edinburgh next year, but if he does, please get yourself along to see that. Try and track him down at a gig somewhere. He's someone, I think part of this show is to reflect who's brilliant and, you know, sort of established people. And then again, on the sort of informational blurbs, I talk about unsung heroes and just people that I want to champion. I really want you to go and see Prince Abdi. He makes me so happy. I love his stuff. I'm sure you will too. That's all on that for the moment. Thank you very much for your donations. Those are continuing to come in. And as ever, I really appreciate them. I'm not going to hammer you with a pitch this time. You know how it works. Comedianscomedian.com. Click on the PayPal button and donate me however much you want. 20 quid, a pound a show. It's up to you. Thank you for everyone that's done that and continuing to do that. I really appreciate your support. I said I wasn't going to hammer you a pitch, and then I've slightly... That wasn't hammering. That was like a little nudge. That was just pay me. So that'll do for now. Email me suggestions for guests. If you would like me to come to your festival and do a live ComCom pod, if you'd like me to come to your small town and do one there, or if you are at a university and you reckon you could swindle your ENTS officer into doing a live one, we've got a couple of those in the pipeline, more on that when they're finalised, then I'm only too happy to come to your university, town, castle, turret, warren or orchard and come along and do some live shows for you there, live comedian shows. And that's that. That's sort of that for now. I made a note of something else I was going to talk about. Oh, Sophie Hagen, friend of the show, brilliant Danish comic working in London, mentioned on social media recently that she is having problems getting things done. I mentioned that specific phrase because that's the name of a book, Getting Things Done, which I am afraid to say, and honestly, this isn't just a stupid setup pudge, I didn't finish it. But what I did get from it was very, very useful. Lots of tips about productivity. And I wondered what your productivity tips were, because I know we're all really busy, especially those of us who have day jobs and are, I'm using us in a sort of royal sense, those of you, I mean, who have day jobs and are still trying to make comedy work. How do you keep it going? How do you keep all the admin going? How do you stay on top of all the stuff to try and carve out a little space for yourself to still work on your jokes, to still work on your act? How do comedians, how do you manage to write jokes in amongst all of the sort of administrative bullshit that seems to explode out of your laptop whenever you open it? And how do you get it done whilst traveling? I've been on the road so much at the moment, it's been doing my head in. And I would love to hear how you are coping with productivity. So if you've got any tips, tricks, tools, anything like that, any little, like, useful little life hacks, such as you could speak in 10 words and put on an image. Those are the sorts of things. You know, the ones where they're like, put some rubber bands over your paint tins and wipe your brushes on them. So things like that, that I can easily absorb and that will make my life more streamlined and more efficient. That's what I'm after. Tweet me at ComComPod. You can follow my own comedy account at Stu Goldsmith if you so desire. And you can also go to stuartgoldsmith.co.uk, which is my own website. Feel free to have a little land at that and check it out if you like. And also comedianscomedian.com. Hit the donate button. Tell other people about the show. Rub it in their faces and ears. And that'll do for now. Let's get back to the smoky interview, the replete with the horrific hacking coughs with Mr. Prince Abdi.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So when did you discover comedy? When you were you like the funny gang member?
Oh, in my school, all we did was joke around. That's all we did every single day. And sometimes I regret it because some of the teachers we made some of the teachers cry.
Really?
Which wasn't nice.
So when you said joke around?
Well, we just didn't do any work. All we did was just dick around in the classroom.
Okay.
We had this teacher, this Spanish teacher, and she had a cross eye. And it was bad because every time she spoke to us, we didn't know which one of us she was talking to. It was horrible. Right? And she was like, I am serious now. I am very serious. I'm like, who are you talking to? I'm talking to you! That was my Spanish accent.
I'm just going to interject here.
I know you're going to bring
it up. Yeah. The part of the reason you got booted from Show Me the Funny was in both episodes you tried to do accents that you were terrible at. In Liverpool, you tried to do a Scouse accent to 100 Scouse women.
Fucking hell.
And that is better now than it was at the time. You clearly practiced. And then when we were with the Scots Guard, you tried to do a Scottish accent.
Do you know what? It was one of those things where, like, you can't tell a comedian not to do something. Like, even like in real life, like not real life, but you can't tell somebody, don't do that because they want to do it. Mm-hmm. So I remember Kay Kopsick telling me, don't do accents. And that went into my brain and it processed, like, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, like, right. Okay. There.
So, yeah, but it was terrible.
It became known as Abdi's Gamble. Amongst the rest of us that were still in the show.
Yeah, and I think that's why they booted me out the second episode, because they got so annoyed with me. They're like, he's not listening. We told him from the last episode not to do accents. He's doing accents again. So they were like, you're good going. Because it was either me and Cole Parker. Do you remember Cole?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and they told me that they were going to kick him out instead of me, but they were just annoyed that I didn't listen to them.
So you were always dicking around at school. Mm-hmm. You and everyone else. Were you a particularly funny one out of your group of mates?
I wasn't the funniest. No, the funniest was this was a guy called Ricky Cooney. We're still in contact now. And it was funny because I shouldn't name him actually. But it's funny because I didn't see Ricky for a long time, and yeah, he was so funny in school. He was the funniest guy ever. I was okay. The rest of us were okay. We all had our moments, but Ricky was funny all the time. But he was a bit horrible to the teacher. He was probably the worst when it came to like being horrible to the teacher. We had this teacher. She was on a large side, you know, quite. And every time she walked, he used to go boom, boom, boom,
yeah,
boom. And it was horrible because she got to a point where she was, you know, she wasn't coming into school because of him. And he would like just deny. He said, I'm not doing anything. And then the head teachers at the time, the head teacher didn't do anything at all. But I was quite a good boy. I was just hanging around with the wrong crowd. I remember I started a fight once in school and I lost. And I never fought again.
You start, what were the circumstances? Why would you start a fight?
I can't remember. I really can't. I started the fight and I got beaten. He beat the crap out of me. I find it funny because I was the one. I thought I was bad, you know. And that was it. There was a girl that I really liked, and she. So me and this other guy were like kind of like, you know, but he was like the more popular guy.
Mm.
And she was like, yeah, Daniel likes me. That was his name. She goes, Daniel likes me. I said, I like you too. And she was like, yeah, but Daniel will beat you up. And I was like, nah, he will never beat me up. You know? I was just like, never. And she was like, yeah, he will knock you out. And, you know, when you're like 14, 15, you're like, nah, it's not going to happen to me because you think, because I thought it was bad. And so I looked for Daniel. It was all my fault. Daniel's walking to his lesson, right? And I said, Daniel, wait there, right? Everybody else like went into their class. And he goes, yeah? And I was like, Natalie's mine, she's not yours. and then I went to punch him. I don't know, I think he did boxing. That's my excuse. He went out of the way and he got me and he headbutted me.
Wow.
And I was dizzy. And then he gave me one kick up the butt. I was on the floor.
Oh, man.
And he calmly just walked into his classroom. And I was like, this black eye kicked me on my butt. I'm on the floor. The teacher came over to me. You know, the teacher said, go to your lesson. So I went to my lesson, I'm sitting down, and everyone's like, ooh, what happened to you? Ooh, what happened to you? Ooh. And that girl came over to me, she went, I told you.
Ouch. Slam.
Yeah, yeah.
So go on. How did you discover comedy then? Was that something you'd always wanted to do?
Yeah, I wanted to do it from school. When I was in school, we watched a VHS tape.
VHS, yeah. That's what we're talking about around here. Not DVDs or CDs.
Yeah, so I watched the VHS of Eddie Murphy. And I think it was Delirious. Delirious? And it was so funny. So funny. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, but at that time, to be honest, I never thought I could do that myself. I just thought this is hilarious.
Yeah.
And then going forward, 10 years later, and I was like 26, I thought, yeah, I'm going to give it a go. So one of my friend at the time from college, she took me to a comedy night, and I went there. And do you know Quincy?
Yeah, Quincy. Yeah, yeah.
Quincy was hosting. I was sitting at the front, and Quincy ripped me to shreds.
That's a great origin.
He's absolutely...
This is the first comedy night you've ever been to.
Yeah.
You sat in the front row and Quincy destroyed thus creating you.
Destroyed me. Like, and it was a black club as well. And the thing with like black clubs is when they go for you, they go for you. Like, they were banging tables. The whole place erupted as Quincy was ripping
into...
When
you, as in the comic on stage, yeah, and they're behind you. Yeah.
So
he was destroying you and killing.
Killing me. Like, he absolutely annihilated me. And I was like, I think I was on a date as well. Like, when my friend took me, I was with a girl. I was trying to impress. Right? I'm sitting in the front, you know. I don't want anyone picking on me. And Quincy, I felt so small. And the girl that was with me is laughing away. I'm like, you're not supposed to laugh, you're with me.
Oh, mate.
Yeah, and then Quincy was like, I'll buy you a drink, go on, I'll buy you a drink. Yeah, it killed me. And then...
What sort of stuff? What kind of...
I can't even remember now. Okay. He was just like, bang. But one of them was... He goes, where'd you come from? And I said, Somalia. And he goes, do you want a passport? He was something like that. I can't remember. He just went into me and he was just like... It was funny. Very funny. And And then after that, I said to myself, I want to do this.
Were you thinking like, I'm gonna get funnier than that guy?
Yeah.
And I'm going to destroy him?
Yeah.
No way, were
which,
you?
Which never happened. He had a night in Stratford in East London, and he told me to come down. And I did it, and it was okay.
Oh, well, you spoke to Quincy afterwards?
Yeah.
You actually said, I want to do this?
Yeah.
That's crazy. So you'd been destroyed by him, yeah, but rather than leave with your tail between your legs, you hung around, he bought you a drink.
Yeah.
And you were like... Sensei, teach me to be funny.
I said to him, yeah, I want to do it. And then there's a comic called Kojo. He was there that night as well. No, he came after. I think he was doing something, but that was his night. It was called Kojo's Comedy Funhouse. So I came there after. He came there after, and I said to him, like, I really want to do this. And he said to me, because they had a little website. He goes, yeah, just drop me an email. And I did. I remember the first gig I did was at Kojo's.
Right, okay.
And some audience members was incredible. They came prepared. When I went on stage, I took it personal at the time, but I'll never take anything personal. But I remember Kojo introducing me like, he said, guys, comedy can be very hard. And this guy is his first time. So just trying to give him some support for him coming on stage. And I went on stage, he introduced me, and I told the first joke, didn't get anything. Tried to tell the second joke and I got nothing. And there was two guys in the front row. I kid you not, they took out a pack of cards and they started playing pack of cards right in front of me. I've never seen anything like that before in my whole life. And then it was horrible. And I was supposed to do 5 minutes and I did about 8 minutes. I was just on stage trying to get them back. And then Kojo came on stage, got me like in a sort of a headlock. And he told me, get off. And then I went off, and then then he started making fun of me, and it was, at the time it was horrible because everybody else is just looking at me going, what are you doing, like, why are you doing this? And then I said to him, I'm gonna come back. And then I did Quincy's, then I did Kojo's again like 3-4 weeks later, and then again it was horrible. But it was better than before. They listened this time. And then I just never stopped. I just kept going. And
what was your stuff? What was the stuff that you took on stage? How did you prepare for that?
I was trying to be like the Black Americans.
Okay.
So I didn't have any set or anything. I remember doing a gig at Up the Creek. And the night before, I was watching Reginald D. Hunter. I was watching him. I just saw him and I was watching him some BBC competition or something. And then... And one of Reg's opening line was like, there's one thing I can guarantee right now. I'm the funniest black folk in here. Like, that was his joke, right? And I went up the creek and I did exactly what Reg said. I was like, there's one thing I can guarantee. I'm the funniest black folk in here, right? And there was one black guy there, and I was like, you're going to disagree with me? And he was like, no. I guess who that was.
Who was that?
At the back.
God, Reg.
Reginald D. Hunter. Yeah, Reg was there, and he was so cool. Like, he did not even, like, sweat. So it was okay, that gig. People were more polite. It was a Sunday. It was more polite. Did 5 minutes, and then I got off stage. I had this routine. I had these boxer shorts with the London Tube map.
Yeah.
Right. So I used to say, you know, whenever people want to ask me, you know, for, you know, direction of the tube, I just show them my boxes so they can just have a look at where they need to go. And then I remember one woman, she was looking for Victoria and Victoria was in my bum. So I put my jeans down and yeah, she looked and she's like, ah, that's disgusting. I mean, she was Italian. That's my Italian accent. And then, yeah, so I got off stage and Reg was like, good work, man. Good work. And I was like, oh my God, I just did his joke like, on stage. And he was really cool about it. And then when he went on stage, he just destroyed it. Like, he was so good. He was closing the show and he was so, so good. Yeah, and then, yeah, I just never stopped. So then I got Time Out magazine.
Yeah.
And I just looked through all the, like, gigs in London. And, yeah, I just kept phoning. And the hardest thing was calling in, like, calling to get a five-minute spot. That was hard for me because I'm not good on the phone. So I'd be nervous. I'd be like, hi, excuse me, good afternoon. can I get 5 minutes? Yeah. And they'd be like, how long have you been going? It's like, oh, I've done like six gigs. Okay, could you call us back when you did like 100? I was like, oh God.
Oh man.
Yeah, and I remember doing the Comedy Cafe. I think it was like my eighth gig, and lots of friends came to support, and it was like the longest 5 minutes ever. It was so long. And I remember, what's his name? Noel Faulkner was there.
Yeah.
And he was like, he goes, when you get some jokes, come back. Yeah, I just never stopped. And yeah, I love it.
So what, in terms of the material, okay, you've got your sight gag, you've got your prop gag with, you know, dropping your trousers.
Yeah.
Were you doing stories? Were you doing stuff? I mean, how's what you do now developed from what you were doing then? Have you got any stuff now that you did 7 years ago?
I've got nothing. Completely different. Now I have like structure. I have like jokes. I had no jokes then. And I didn't know what I was doing. To be honest, I wasn't even writing. I was on stage. And whatever come to my mind, I would just say it. The only similarity like I had when I first started to now is that when something happened, I would talk about it. I'll give you an example. One of the jokes that I did when I first started was I was walking past the park and there's these young kids playing football. I wanted to kick the ball and it went near me, but it went a bit further than me, but I was nearest to the ball. So this little kid must have been about 6 or 7, looked at me and he went, you're going to get that, mate. this little kid is like threatening me. It was like a proper threat. And I was like, you're going to get that. And then I was walking to the... Yeah, so I was just thought, he's a kid, let me go and get the ball for him. So I went to get the ball, I kicked it towards them, and it went past the kid. Like, and he goes, and that, I know, do you want to go and get that, I know? I was like, this little kid. So I ignored him, right, and I walked away, and he goes, hey, do you want a bit of me? Do you want a 7 years old, right, walking towards me, right? And his mate must have been about, I don't know, 8 or 9, slightly older than him, holding him back, going, leave it, Rob. I was just like... I'm not even making this up. I was a little bit scared of this little 7-year-old. I'm like, what confidence of a 7-year-old that want to, like, you know, fight you? I was just like, nah, gonna kill. Yeah, I ran away. Okay.
Do you think an above average amount of weird shit happens to you?
Absolutely. Like, all the crazy things happen to me. all the, like...
Why is that? Do you deliberately put yourself in situations where there's crazy shit going on?
No, no.
Because almost all of your material, you've got some great jokes as well.
Yeah.
You know, we'll go into them in a bit. But you've got a lot of anecdotal stuff. You've got a lot of true stories, or apparently it's stories that are presented as true. And I get... I mean, what do you... What would you say is the percentage of the true stuff currently in your act? How much of it is... How many of the stories you tell...
80%.
Really? They're just completely true?
They're completely true. Tell you another true story. We're in Dubai, right? This is my second time here, right? And a couple of nights ago, I'm at the bar, and this woman comes over and starts chatting to me. And then she's like, oh, hello, how you doing? I was just being friendly, I thought she was like from the gig. And oh, how you doing? I'm good. You know. And then she's like, oh. And then we started talking. I just thought, oh, do you want a drink? So got her a drink. Drink's expensive over here, by the way. It's like 12 quid. Mm. It's like, okay. And then I got myself a drink. Then she got another one. And then I must have got like 3 or 4 drinks. I was talking. Then she goes to me, I charge you 2,000 dirhams. And I was like, excuse me? She's like, I charge you 2,000 dirhams. I was like, what are you talking about? She goes, sex business. I'm like, well, I'm not into that. Sorry. And then she went, no. Okay, I'll give you one. I'll do 1,500. Right. So now she's like bringing it down. She's giving me a discount now.
Okay.
And I was like, no. Then she went down to 1,000. Right. So then I thought, okay. I said, okay. I'll tell you what. You give me the money for the drinks that I just got you. Right. And then we'll see what. And she gave me like it was about I don't know 50 quid, 60 quid's worth. Like, she gave it to me. It was about 300 dirhams. So she gave that to me. I took that, walked off. Serious. So from far, it looks like I was the pimp.
What?
And that happened in Doha.
Yeah.
So what?
It's insane, though, over here with the prostitution. It's absolutely insane.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, I just could not believe it. Anyway.
But, I mean, do you... Is it that you are particularly... What quality is it that crazy shit happens to you? And I want to make it clear as well, from the point of view of people who haven't seen your set, but there's your stories about, like, you know, being in a French bakery and pretending to have a, you know, just having a French accent. And
yeah.
The guy, yeah, that's true?
That's true, but that wasn't in France. I did that in London.
Okay. Yeah. But you pretended to be French.
Yeah,
the guy was, okay.
I went in, I was just in a funny mood and the guy was just really getting upset.
You've got a story, one of your stories is there's an ostrich in it. At the end of the story is the ostrich falls in a hole.
Yeah.
It's stuff that shouldn't work. But like, if I tried to deliver it, it wouldn't be funny, you know? And like, have you got a story about going to a casting and having to paint a wall?
Yeah. That's a true story.
I'm
serious. That is a true story. But it was a genuine, the guy just, I just didn't get the part. But he was actually, so usually when you do castings for like, for an advert or film or whatever, it's in a studio. So I'm thinking it's in a studio. I'm looking through this, the map. It was in Richmond, right? In Southwest London. So I went over there. It's a guy's house. I'm serious. The guy's waiting for me, expecting me, right? I get there. He's like, oh, just come through this way. He goes, so this is for Dulux Paint. Just look casual. I've got this wall. I just need you to paint this wall, right? I'm serious. I'm painting this wall for this guy.
In his house?
Yeah, in his house. I'm actually painting.
Is he filming it?
He's filming it. I'm painting it. And he goes, just do one more coat. I did 2 coats of his wall. I'm serious. And then he goes to me, thanks, I'll be in touch. And he did get in touch, going, sorry, but you didn't get the part. But at the same time, I felt like, you know, he's a con artist.
I mean, the odds of someone actually doing that as a con are insane.
Yeah.
The idea that someone who is a professional stand-up comedian that regularly weird shit happens to would be one of the people he picked on to do that scam, that's bananas. It can't
maybe
possibly
seen my
happen,
act.
But it clearly has.
Yeah. Maybe he's seen my act, I don't know.
But so what is it? What quality is it about you do you think this shit keeps happening to you?
I don't know. I just keep getting myself into this.
You did get yourself into it. Are you quite sort of naive in the way you deal with the world?
I can be naive, yeah. Yeah. It's like even like with the youth, like in London, sometimes they just talk to me. Like they just say things to me, and I was like, for example, recently I had a youth just, I don't know, maybe I've got an approachable face.
Yeah, maybe you do.
I had this little youth come talking to me one time on a night bus, and he was talking to me about seahorses. Like, I wasn't expecting that from a little youth who's about 15, 16 with a hoodie. And he's telling me about, you know, about the seahorses and how they live. And he was saying, he was like using his, like, he's talking like a proper rude boy. He's like, do you know seahorses? And I was like, no. And he goes, you know, the female, she passes the egg to the male and the male has the baby. Did you know that? And I was like, I did not know that. Then he goes, check it out. Like, why does this happen to me? And I did check it out, to be fair, and it's true.
It's true, absolutely.
So, I had no idea.
So when you're assembling all of this stuff, I mean, do you... Like, you're going to do Edinburgh this year, like in 2015, you think, maybe?
Yeah. I'm still... Yeah, I've got a meeting when I get back to London. So, yeah, okay. It's more than likely, I think I'll do it now.
At this final gig that we're going to do here tonight at the Laugh Factory in Dubai.
Yeah.
Are you going to... like when you put the stuff together, or even pre-gig, you know, when you're writing the stuff, what does it look like when you're writing? Are you just sat there with a pen trying to remember stupid shit that's happened to you? Or do you get an existing story and tell it conversationally and work on it that way? What's kind of the work? Are you just literally repeating verbatim weird shit?
No, I mean, to be honest, some comics sit down and they write jokes. I can't do that. I go on stage, do the jokes, then I'll write after. Because I'm dyslexic, so I do it the other way around. And I don't know. A lot of things happen to me, and it just feels like it's surreal sometimes, like all these things happening to me. I'll give you an example, another example. My daughter turned 3 a few months ago, and I took her to the aquarium in London, and we were queuing up, and I saw the prices when we get to the front. And the prices for children start from 3 years old. It's like £15.90. Right? So I tried to lie to the lady. She goes, how old is she? I was like, she's 2 years, 11 months. And my daughter shouted, I'm free. and then she went, she said she's 3. And then I tried to tell the lady, no. She said, it's free to get in. Like, my daughter goes, no, I'm free. And I don't know where she got. She had like her birthday badge right here. She had a little cake in her pocket. She had like pictures. She had all these balloons. So I had to pay. And it was insane. Yeah. And I was like, why did you do this to me? She had no idea. She's so innocent. Like, she was just happy that she was free. And I was just like, we could have saved like almost £16. But...
So with that story, for example, would you take that on stage and just say that on stage and see if it got a laugh?
Yeah.
So just a case of going to open spots?
Yeah.
So you just gig, so all of your work happens at the open spots?
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes it does happen in like proper paid gigs as well, but I try to stick to my solid like 20 when I'm doing like, say, the store, or if I'm doing Banana, or if I'm doing Comedy Cafe, or, you know, Glee or whatever. During the week, say Monday to Wednesday or Thursday, I'll try all new stuff that's happened to me. Or
and do you what are the instincts, what's the process that's going on when you decide what story to tell out of the latest 10 weird things that have happened to you? Do you have a particular... Do you feel that you've got sort of like a radar for stuff that will work?
I mean, I don't know if you have this as well, but, you know, a lot of the things, sometimes I think they're hilarious, and then I'll do it, and the audience will be like, no. So that's happened to me quite a few times. But usually, I'm usually all right. Usually if I feel like something is funny, most of the time it is funny. But it's how you say it as well at the same time. You know, it's your style, your timing, you know, all of that.
And what are those things to you? Because what would you say is your style, or what is it that you are? What's your relationship to an audience? How do you describe it? How would you define your relationship to an audience?
I made them relax. I try to put them in like safe hands and make them comfortable. Once audience members are comfortable and they trust you, then you can kind of go, okay, I'm gonna use you lot as guinea pigs.
Just try it. Now that's interesting, because obviously people won't have seen this, but they probably heard in your voice what I saw as well, which is that you stopped being quite so sort of goofy and animated, and there is something else going on. There's like a little twinkle there of like, okay, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. No, I know what I'm doing.
Well, I know you know what you're doing, but I think it's...
No, I like to make the audience feel comfortable. I like warm audience, so I try to be warm with them. I don't like to be horrible or anything like that. And usually, you know, if they can see that you're enjoying yourself, then they enjoy themselves.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to get to the bottom of this, because
Let's get to the bottom.
Do you think you're being yourself on stage? Are you being a particular version of yourself? What's the difference between you on stage and you now?
Not much. I think when I'm on stage, I've got more energy, definitely. When I'm off stage, I've got less energy. Don't know why.
Does your mood change then? Like when you're on stage, if you've had a bad day, are you Prince that's had a bad day on stage, or
That's a really good question. I try not to. I mean, it's hard, you know. So as comics, sometimes we have really bad days. But yeah, I try not to. I try to shut everything down and focus on the gig. Because I remember I was married for 3 years, and I remember when I was going through my divorce. Yeah, it was a tough time at the time, and yeah, I was gigging. I was doing like Christmas shows, and they're not easy, Christmas shows. But saying that, I just shut down. So when I'm on the stage, it's all about the gig, and then when I come off stage, then yeah, all the thoughts and everything come back to me. So I tried to make it like that.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's tough.
And I want to pin down exactly what I mean. There's something about, I want to ask about this expression, right? You're not as green as your cabbage looking. Have you heard that expression?
Yep.
Yeah, that's very, very applicable to you, I think. You look like a fucking cabbage. And on stage, you turn up and you basically say to the audience, I'm this total cabbage. Do you know what I mean? You go, I can't believe all this stuff has happened to me.
I have fun.
This thing is unbelievable. What's going on? So do you see what I mean?
So, ladies and gentlemen, I've been called daft. And now a cabbage. Carl Donnelly's got that funny joke about he saw someone threw a cabbage at someone. Someone's walking and someone's on the bus, and they just took some cabbage and they threw it at some guy and he hit his face. That's how I feel like.
you get where I'm coming from, though. You're what you're presenting on stage is I'm just daft.
Yeah. I try. Well, I wouldn't say daft, but I'd say, yeah, having fun and goofy.
Goofy.
Like goofy Bell.
Okay.
But it is me, honestly. That's how I am, like real life.
Believe you.
No. Real life, I'm like that. Obviously, there's a lot of things I haven't, you know, spoken about, like me being in the gang, and the VHS, and the car, and I remember, like, when I was, like, 18, I was, like, I had, like, a few girls on the go, because I thought I was a bad boy, because I had a car. And being in the cinema with one of the girls, and all the people coming in, and I'm just, like, ducking in kisses one of the other girl that I'm seeing, and then she was, like, uncomfortable. She's like, what's wrong with you, and without a blink, I was like, I'm in a gang, shh. And I wasn't in a gang at the time. And then she was like helping me out. She's like, okay, duck, there's four guys. Yeah, they've got caps. Yeah, one's got a red cap. One's got beard. Yeah, that might be them. And then she's like, it's okay, now some girls. And I was like, no, some of the girls are in the gang.
Would you put stories like that on stage?
I don't know if they're funny.
But if they were funny, would you be happy revealing those kind of, like, because at the moment the stage persona is,
yeah,
this is some crazy stuff that happened.
Yeah, absolutely. I would. It's things I see as well. Like, I see different things as well. Like,
what do you mean? Different things to what regular
like
people
just
see?
Happening. Yeah. Well, I don't know if you see it, but like, I don't know. Like, I saw a guy get thrown out of a nightclub once in very, like, violent way. Two bouncers just grabbed him, threw him, right? And he didn't even, like, complain. He just got up and just walked off. So he must have did something so bad. So I wanted to find out. So I went over to the guy. I was like, you all right, mate? He goes, yeah, I know. He was quite pissed. I was like, are you all right, mate? You know, that was quite aggressive what they did. And he goes, nah, mate. I think I got away. I was like, what did you do? He goes, I pissed on a carpet inside the club. I was like, who does that? Just didn't care.
But there is something, maybe there is something about the way you involve yourself with the world. Like, you bothered to go over and ask the guy, whereas I probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Another comic might not.
Yeah, I was trying to get material.
So there is a part of you then that's thinking,
yeah, I could get material from this.
Like, do you ever make decisions when you're out, like, when you're out after a gig and you meet some random people that want to take you for a drink, does the knowledge that you need to be getting material out of life, does that encourage you to say yes to offers when you might otherwise say no?
No, not really, no. Because usually, I'll be honest with you, when I mean, we are funny human beings. So, you know, sometimes it's very difficult to get many people that got very funny stories. So, yeah, it's not really. I don't really get many funny stories from people that I talk to.
No, I mean, I'm not being clear. What I mean is, do you in life tend to say, yeah, go on then, I'll do this. What, go into a bar over there? Yeah, okay, I'll do that. Do you tend to say yes to situations?
To get material.
In order to get material?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So, because I think that's interesting.
Sometimes, so I'm like, I don't know about you, but my brain is like always thinking of ideas, always, every single time, like this thinking like, oh, I can make this funny, I can make that funny, it's always. And if I don't have my notepad, I usually just write it on my phone, like, and then later on I just edit it and look into it. So yeah, I'm always thinking of ideas. Yeah.
And are there particular, do you recognise certain kind of themes, not themes, do you recognise certain things that you end up talking about? Like, have you got any stuff that you thought, okay, I've got quite a lot of stuff like this now, I should move on to different stuff? Do you know what I mean? Do you recognise?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I've got about, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes on just, like, youths, on British youths.
Yeah, okay.
So then, yeah, I need to move away from that because I've got so much on it. Or I've got, like, 5 minutes, say, on a night bus, and then I need to move away from that and have something completely new and...
Yeah.
Fresh, yeah.
Like, it's interesting you mentioned your daughter there. Like, you've got a three-year-old kid. I haven't really heard you do much on stage.
Yeah.
You sort of normally expect stand-ups have got stuff about their kid.
Yeah, because she's not funny. No. No, do you know what it is? I think a lot of comics do talk about their kids on stage, and I'm trying to move away from that and not talk about...
Why is that?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I just think because... Everyone talks about their kids on stage. Mm-hmm. So I'm just thinking, well, I'm just going to be another comic that talks about their kids on stage. So I just want to be away from that. That's just me. And plus, I haven't got anything funny to say.
Okay. No, that's interesting because I think I'm sure both of those are true to varying...
I got into trouble at her nursery recently.
Sorry, Ian Coppinger that we're touring with at the moment has found this as well. You start a story and the both of us just start laughing because we're just like, what the fuck has he got up to next? Hang on.
No, I got into trouble at the nursery because there's this kid, she's got a little bully. This kid keeps taking her toys all the time.
Oh, man.
Right?
Okay.
So she told me about this kid. So I was like, show me. I saw this little kid, right? And he had like one of her toys from the day before. So I went over to him. Now, this little kid was smart. Little smart fucker. You know what he did? So my daughter's there. She didn't like come after me. She just stood there. She's like, there he is, daddy. So I went over to this kid. I was like, so you've been taking my daughter's toys? He was like, yeah. He did not care, right? He's like, yeah. And he's so smart. He was like walking backwards. Do you know where he was taking me?
Huh.
Where the CCTV camera was?
No.
I'm serious. So next thing you see is me taking this...
No, come on, you can't have been doing that deliberately.
I know, I think he did it deliberately. So I was like, this is my daughter's toy. He goes, yeah, but it's mine now, right? So I was like, no, you're going to give it back. So all you see is me snatching the toy of this little three and a half year old, right? And they saw it on the CCTV and they were like, why are you taking the kid's toys? I was like, that was my daughter's toys. They was like, yeah, but you should have asked us. You know, we're the star.
Yeah, yeah.
It just looks so bad on me. I look like a bully dad. Yeah. And his dad, Gary the Bulldog, is looking for me.
So what, we've got to wrap up soon, but I want to ask you, what kind of, when you're editing the story, so you do the writing the other way around, you do it on stage first, then you come off, and then you write it out. What kind of things, what does it look like when you write it out? What are you...
I just do bullet points.
You bullet points, okay.
Yeah. So, for example, if I'm doing a joke about ostrich, I just say ostrich, then hole, and then I know the rest.
Sure, but so do you, like, if you had to remember some stuff you were doing 5 years ago, or 3 years ago, say, you would don't have a record of it, or you just remember it if you just saw the bullet points?
I try, like, not, I try get rid of material from before. I try. Okay. I mean, there's one, my oldest joke was probably the Bollywood joke. I've had that for ages, but everybody loves it, so I just keep it.
Big musical closer. but when you're sitting working out your bullet points, are you working on the joke there? Do you do work on it? And what work is that you're doing?
Work I'm doing is I twitch it. I do different things. So I kind of I'll do a joke. So I'll do it in a different way, and then that way, and then this way, and then so basically, I would try to improve it every single time I do it on stage.
Okay.
Every single time. So if I don't know, if I do a joke about, like, I've got that joke I do in Scotland with the girl, like, you're right. I was like, yeah, and then, can I please touch your hair?
Yeah.
And I was like, go for it. And he touches my hair and he goes, all right, I'll buy you a paint. Now, yeah. I thought it might be better if I say, excuse me, if you let me touch your hair, I'll buy you a paint. See?
Yeah.
So it sounds better. And I'm like, oh, you got yourself a deal. So I just try to, just adjust it every single time and just try to make it funnier. Sometimes just the wording that you need to just twist around to make a joke funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you're trying it and then you go on stage, try it that night, then come off and...
Yeah, and then rewrite it if I don't get the laugh that I want.
Okay.
If I don't get that encore and standing ovation.
Which is and yet you're...
to happen. And it'll never happen.
I'm convinced you're... I tell you what, let's... You said you did 15 open spots for this door.
Yeah, about that, yeah.
15?
Yeah. I mean, some of it were me just coming in and just watching the gigs, and the open spot doesn't turn up, and then I'll be like, can I go on? And then
how would you know that the open spot hadn't turned up? Would you be like in the backstage bit? Would you go and
no? I never went in the backstage bit when I was an open spot ever. But what I used to do is I used to Simon, who's great. I'd ask Simon, like, if the open spot doesn't turn up, can I go on?
Yeah, like, right.
All right.
Yeah, that's canny.
Yeah, he was really cool. And I remember, like, a few times he come over to me and he goes, oh, there's no open spot. Do you want to do that?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah. And then there was another time where John Maloney was hosting and the open spot didn't turn up. And he come over to me, go, oh, how you doing? All right? And I didn't really know John then. And I introduced myself. I was like, hi, John, I'm Prince. I was like, hi, you know, like, can you let me know if the open spot doesn't turn up? And he was like, yeah, sure. And then he went on and he was like, yeah, the open spot didn't turn up. And then Don came over and he was like, do you want to do a 10? And I was like, yeah. I'm scared of Don. The Don, he's so cool, though. He's like, he's cool. He's the coolest guy in comedy, man. But like, he came over to me and he was like, do you want to do a 10? Yes! So I did it, and then, I did about 15, maybe even more. And, and I remember how I got it was, it was so lucky. So the store, like, they changed the timings. So for the late show, I thought it was at midnight. It was actually like 11, wasn't it? So I was coming from, I was doing the Comedy Cafe. I was doing a 20 there, but I was closing.
Mm.
Now, Noel said to me, I don't think you have enough time. If you close, you won't make it to the store.
Mm.
So he put me in the middle and he told me to do 15 minutes, which was really nice of him. So I did 15 minutes instead of 20, and then Noel dropped me to the store, like near the store. Like, the traffic was horrific. So we got out and we relaxed. It's about 11. We're walking, relaxed. And then we got there like half 11.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, and who was on? I think it was Stephen K. Amos was on.
Huh.
Totally smashing it. I arrived, and they were like, you're in 1 minute. I was like, what? I thought you started at midnight. Nope, you started at 11. So I just went, came off, destroyed it. I was introduced straight away after Stephen, maybe about a minute later. And then I did my 10, and then Don comes over, and he goes, that was quite impressive. You just went on after Stephen came, and he had a great gig. And he just went, we'll be in touch. You know, Dottie. So, we'll be in touch. And the next thing, they offered me a 20. It was just like amazing.
Yeah,
it was like a year later, but I was like, I'm waiting for this.
Because you'd done the Gong Show, hadn't you?
Oh yes, I did. I got gonged that in 11 seconds.
Is that a record? It's probably not even a record, is it?
No, no. I went on stage and some guy just went, he just put his card, he just didn't like me or something, I don't know, I've never seen him before. He just went, no! Imagine that. And then there was another guy, and I tried to tell a joke, and I was like, do you know when you're in a bus, and some guy went, no! It's the funniest, such a funny heckle. And then I ignored it, I was like, hey, you know someone sitting next to you, he's like, no! 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 And then, 11 seconds, bang. And he just threw me.
Do you have a sense of what kind of comedian you want to be, like 10 years from now? Do you have a sense of what... Is there any sort of principle guiding you? Like, you want to be like such and such, or you want to have certain types of gigs? You want... You know, comedy can...
I want to be international.
Yeah?
Mm. I want to be international, and I want to travel the world, and I want to have fans all over the world. That's my goal. And like I don't know, a lot of comics like that. Like, there's a comic in Canada called Russell Peters. He's got his fans all over. He's like probably the highest earning comedian in the world. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's not so much about earning the most. It's just having fun and having. You know,
you're incredibly well travelled. You're forever going, I was in New York the other weekend, or just conversationally. You get around a lot.
I travel a bit, yeah. I try to travel a bit, but and I hustle. I was in New York, and the biggest club, probably, it's not a big club, it's not huge, but it's like 100 seats, 170, nice intimate. It's called the Comedy Cellar. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you it's the hardest place to get in. Because you've got people like Chris Rock and Louis C.K. and Bill, but all these people are just coming there all the time. And I smuggled my way in there. I went there and I was like, hi, my name is Prince. I'm a big deal in the UK. I'm on all the TV channels. I was bullshitting there. And then they gave me a spot. And then one of the night I was on stage, watching me was Chris Rock. I was like, who's that dude? And it almost threw me. I was like, oh, is that Chris Rock? Oh, shit, is that Chris Rock? And he kind of helped me with one of my jokes. See, this is what I mean about, editing some of the things that you're wording. Because I got a joke about prison officers, right? And the audience I didn't really get, because they don't say prison officers in the they say prison guards.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what...
sure, that was throwing it.
Yeah, that's what Chris Rock told me to say.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, do this tomorrow, but... say prison guards, and I did it the next day. It was much better, and they got the joke even.
Yeah,
it was great.
So you're a hustler then?
I'm a hustler, baby. I'm a hustler. Yeah, I try to be. So I mean, yeah, I go into a few clubs in New York just bullshitting.
That's impressive, man. Because that's the sort of thing probably a lot of people could try doing, and a lot of people don't even try. And I'm sure a lot of people try and fail.
I did this. I hustled my way into this club in Brooklyn. The deeper you go in New York, the more like kind of ghetto it is. And I didn't care, so I went deep down in Brooklyn, a proper like ghetto place, right? And it was proper ghetto, got Latinos, African Americans, like you got the white dudes with the caps and the tattoos. It's proper rough. And I'm about to go on, this dude comes over to me, he's like, yo man, you gonna be funny tonight? And I was like, well, I have to get on stage here. He's like, alright, because I just paid $5. I was like, okay. And the gig was fine, it was okay, but it was my accent was kind of messing them up.
Yeah, okay.
Because there was one dude, he was just like in the corner, and he's just like holding his head, he's just looking away, holding his head. So at one point, I had to address it. I was like right in the corner, I could see him, he's disturbing me and the audience, and I said to him, are you okay there? He goes, you don't sound like that, man. That's not you, man.
He was freaking out. Yeah. You were doing an English accent.
It was hilarious. And then the dude that said, I paid $5, come up to me, he goes, that was all right, man, that was all right. But you owe me $1. And I remember somebody stole my Red Bull. I bought a Red Bull at the bar. And then I looked left and my Red Bull was gone. So I said to the girl behind the bar, I said, excuse me, somebody just took my Red Bull. I was very polite. She's like, you what? I was like, somebody just took my Red Bull. I just, you know, gave you the money for the Red Bull. And she goes, so what? She was like, traveling ass motherfucker. I was like, oh, yeah. I need to get the hell out of here.
So what would be your advice then? We'll finish with this. What would be your advice for newer acts?
Don't do it. Quit right now. Stick to your job. Best advice is be patient. Be patient. Enjoy the journey. You know, it's a marathon. It's definitely not a sprint. I remember when I first started. I forgot to mention this. I called the Comedy Store. I'm kidding you not. Called the Comedy Store, went to voicemail, left the voicemail. I said, this is Prince Abdi. It must have been like my fifth gig. I was like, this is Prince Abdi, just calling about a weekend.
That is hustle.
That is.
Did they get back to you?
No, they did not get back to me. But yeah, I said that. So the best thing is just to be, because when I first started, I thought, I thought it was going to happen overnight. And it doesn't. So just enjoy the journey. Enjoy yourself. Be patient. Don't take anything personal. And have fun. Have lots and lots of fun. And and if you come to Dubai, stay away from the prostitutes.
Thanks, man.
No worries.
So that was Prince. Thank you very much to him for coming along. Thanks to you for listening. Do share it. Click like on facebook.com/Stuart Goldsmith Comedy, which is the current residing place of the Comedians Comedian Facebook fan page. Or you can join the group, which is a slightly more private affair. I'll leave it to you as to which of those you'd like to do. Just have a little search for that within Facebook and you can connect. Tell me what guests you like to hear. Tell me where you'd like me to be doing the show. Productivity tips if you fancy. And that will do for now. I think I always get to this bit and think I've got something else to say. At the moment, I don't. I'm not really advertising anything at the moment. But if anyone knows any large sponsors, I've decided rather than try and get lots of little adverts on board, what I might do is try and find one big sponsor that wants to give me a massive bag of cash every week in return for being the sponsor of the show. So if you know anyone that works in sponsorship or with big brands or anyone that might be interested... I mean, it worked when I asked for a mega nerd. I found a mega nerd. More on that later. Meeting him next week. So if you, why not email me with the subject line sponsorship if you've got any great ideas about how I can wangle cash out of this show such that I can stop giving you all such a hard time about it. That's all for now. Let me consult my notes. That is all for now. Speak to you next week with the brilliant Louisa Omulan.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.